Midway across the Hudson River. It was a perfectly circular disc.
And I am too surprised.
Well, the thing is hovering sort of 100 yards away. I could have hit it with a breach if I'd gone.
For the first time in our history, we're studying something that's studying us.
Nobody told me there'd be days like this.
Suddenly, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light that struck the dummy warhead, doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead.
Strange day indeed. Most peculiar, mama. Roll.
The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Oh, good evening, good afternoon, good morning, good day, because I know you're listening down there in the Antipodes. Welcome to our listeners around the world to edition 352 of Strange Days Indeed, the program that observes and reports on the phenomena that surround one of the greatest mysteries that humanity has ever faced. Or is that hupersonty? Hupersonty has ever faced UFOs, unidentified flying objects. One of these days I will get through this opening without doing a Python bit. This program gives you the opportunity to expand your mind and hear from and about credible people who've had incredible experiences. Tonight, Dave Furlot is in studio. He'll also be here with his take on it. Evening, Dave.
Good evening there, Earl.
Oh, just another wonderful week, huh?
Oh, isn't it though? Very warm.
Very warm up here. And one of the speakers at this fall's UFO conference here in Toronto, regular contributor Stephen G. Bassett, will be with us at the bottom of the hour. And later, some interesting UFO history this week as we talk with film producer and author Robert Emmenegger. Holloman, Air Force Base, Disney, and UFOs. UFO footage at Holloman. An interesting man who sort of disappeared from the field for a while, but he will be with us tonight. Lurking in the background here at News Talk 1010, the pilot in our master control tonight is Big Daddy D. Big Daddy B is the man. And Drew Garner also, he's really in the background. I see his arm coming up over the top of one of those huge LCD screens in there.
Is
and of course
right?
Yeah, that was Drew.
Hey, cool.
He looks taller than he actually is. And in Montreal, Jim Pacheco is taking care of business there for us. Evening, Jim. An interesting story out in Niagara Falls this week. Back on July the 11th at around 12 p.m., now that presumably is noontime, a black teardrop-shaped aircraft floated high in the sky. It was weaving in and out and in and out of... What? We don't know. Yeah, it being a clear sky relatively for the last 9 weeks in this neighborhood, it was probably weaving in and out of clouds or veering left and right and traveling very fast. The witness was sitting in the front yard when they looked up and saw this black-colored object, looked at it closely at first, thought it was a kite or a balloon, and when they looked back at it later, it was on the other side of the sky. Deciding its shape wasn't anything like a balloon, it seemed to be much larger. The witness thought it was too weird and grabbed their camera and took some pictures, and then suddenly it started moving sharply, and it started to seem like it was weaving in and out of pylons. Aha!
Oh, I see.
So pylons.
What do you call that thing? Slaloming.
Okay.
In disguise.
Yeah.
Sounds like a good thing.
Yeah, downhilling, slaloming. They watched it until it finally was out of sight.
Hmm.
A good James Brown song.
It'd be nice to see those images that they took.
Yeah, it would. Filer's Files. George Filer maybe has those. It doesn't say anything about Peter Davenport's new fork on that report. But thank you to George Filer for that one. And for this one, on July 12th, at just after 2 a.m. in the morning, a witness went outside because he couldn't sleep. Now, there's a familiar story. I couldn't sleep, so I went outside. I could have turned on the TV or the radio or picked up a book, but I went outside. I stood in the back alley looking at the stars. It was a very clear night with just a couple of clouds visible, and wasn't there for more than 5 minutes when what they thought was a satellite moving north at about 90 degrees directly overhead stopped dead in its tracks and lit up to an enormous bright light that appeared to them to be pulsating.
Hmm.
It must have been one of this U.S. Navy intelligence satellites going north. It lasted for about 5 seconds, then started to diminish until it was the same speck in the sky as before, and it continued on its path. Now, the witness is an amateur astronomer and a sky watcher, and does the sky watching as often as the weather permits, and knows that this was way too high to be a helicopter, which is often seen in their area. Mm-hmm. For this thing to go from a pinpoint of light to about the size of the tip of an index finger in brightness is very strange, the witness says, as they're sure it must have been very high in altitude. If there's an explanation, they'd love to hear it. Yeah, wouldn't we all? Mm-hmm. Because it has them at a loss. Color was bright white, and no noise was heard. And that was from one of our guests last week, Brian Vike.
Oh, okay.
Up there in Houston, British Columbia, HBCC UFO Research. That was an interesting, I would say.
That would definitely be interesting, particularly since satellites don't travel north to begin with.
Well, some do, apparently.
Do they?
Yeah, some.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
I don't know why. Maybe they're just bewildered or confused. But...
why, they're looking for Santa.
Oops, we launched that one in the wrong direction.
Sorry about that, boys.
Yeah. Just another NASA deliberate mistake.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good old NASA.
Talking of NASA, and we were talking last week with Mike Woods about the rovers, an interesting NOVA this week on PBS on the rovers and the start of their journeys, Sojourner and Spirit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
good documentary.
Those two particular vehicles, I mean, are just incredible, period. Mm-hmm. You know, the fact that they have been going for so long past their mission.
Oh, yeah. And the money's going to run out to control them, steer them, do the research work before the batteries run out on those puppies, as Woodsy calls them.
I wouldn't mind having a couple of those batteries. They obviously are good.
Yeah, that would be really good in my MP3 player. That's nice.
There you go. No, they'd only last for about 12 minutes there.
Yeah. Dave Ferlat is in studio with me tonight. Victor Vigiani apparently is still away. Went out west with Lori, and I think he was due back Thursday, but maybe he just decided to stay on longer because it's just so darn beautiful out there in the Rockies.
Probably having a great time out there with the Cowboys.
Yeah, and now they got their haircuts. But for those of you who aren't living here, it's the Stockmen who had their beef embargoed when they had one case of mad cow out west, and a couple of the guys for a joke said, well, I'm not going to cut my hair until the embargo is lifted on Canadian cattle across the border, and I'm already getting boring. And they grew their hair anyway for a long time, had it shorn off today, and nobody could call them sissies anymore. But there's still a people like that.
Yes, that's true.
They're the salt of the earth. Remember that, Dave Ferlat.
They certainly are.
We shall break and we shall come back with more of these strange days.
Indeed.
Here with his take on it, here's Dave Ferlat.
It's time we had a frank and open discussion about the term UFOs and everything that embodies it. And why might I be bringing this up, you might ask? Well, it's simple. Over the past decade or so, it might appear that people have been using the UFO moniker as a shield because they're afraid of being labeled, or because we've muddied the waters so much with all the knowledge and pseudo-knowledge that we've discovered, we really don't know what to call this thing. I'm not quite when aliens from another planet became extraterrestrial biological entities, EBEs, but there are some very logical reasons behind it. What has now become known as the traditional flying saucer or classic flying saucer UFO has become somewhat rare in sighting reports because we have a multitude of other UFO shapes. The acorn, the ball, the triangle, the boomerang, the canister, and pure light or energy balls, and that's just to name a few, have been reported by thousands of people all over the world. The infamous little green men description of aliens never did and still doesn't cover it anymore because we have grays in tall and short form. We have reptilians. We have Nordic types with blonde hair and blue eyes and even some insect-like humanoid creatures. And our alien visitors aren't happy with just landing and picking up soil samples. Now they abduct the citizens of our planet to either conduct experiments on them or have sex with them. They mutilate our cattle and other animals, and they leave us cryptic messages in the form of crop circles by destroying some of our food. But if that's not enough to confuse us about UFOs and alien creatures, to really, really muddy the waters about them, we also have to add some pretty incredible theories about who and what UFOs are and what they're doing here. To that end, we have theories about UFOs being time-traveling machines, and the occupants being from our distant or not-so-distant future. We also have theories about UFOs and their occupants being dimensional travelers, and coming to us from either a fourth or a fifth dimension that we can't see or comprehend. And of course, there's the theory that UFOs and their occupants are from some parallel universe. To further add confusion to the recipe, try mixing some of those theories together, and we could have parallel universe, interdimensional travelers, or time travelers from another dimension, and you can see just how thinking about it could make your brain hurt. However, to really and finally throw the whole ufological community against a wall to see what sticks, you come up with a thing called exopolitics, and then you get a whole bunch of theories, most all of it based upon information that has been gleaned from some not quite so notable sources. Okay, the reality is some guys or sources that have been proven to be liars. And even people who have no interest in UFOs suddenly find their brains hurting. People who believe in exopolitics tend to believe that there are potentially 57 different races of aliens that are either good or evil visiting the planet, and they have some kind of alien agenda that would see us being conquered, eliminated from the cosmos, or surrendering our recipe for strawberry ice cream. Bottom line here, of course, is that if there are 57 different species of aliens, they'd all be traveling different types of spacecraft, hence UFOs instead of flying saucers, and extraterrestrial biological entities instead of aliens from outer space. The UFO community has gotten confused and overrun with theories, disinformation, and people just plain lying to us about stuff. I long for the time when it was simpler, and the only UFOs found in our skies were flying saucers, and the only alien creatures were little gray alien beings trying to collect soil samples instead of human trophies. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Furlott, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
Yes, very nice. The interesting report that Linda Moulton Howe has at her website recently, and Stuart Miller pointed it out to me in his news updates that he sends to UFO updates almost on a daily basis, Stuart Miller being a British correspondent.
Mm-hmm.
A man named Mike Booth, who's an artist and musician in Marlborough, Wiltshire, England, said that his attention, he was riding his bike.
Uh-huh.
His attention was caught by three objects in a field on the left-hand side of the road. He stopped because he realized straight away that he was looking at something he'd never seen before. These objects were about 4 feet wide, 6 feet in length, about 2 to 3 feet of a curved top showing above the tops of wheat where they were.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Oh, my.
Oh, my. They flew down a sort of straight line that they were creating ahead of them.
Oh, so crop circles in the making?
Had a camera.
Oh.
Had a camera in his cell phone in his bag. Did it occur to him?
To shoot this?
It did, but for some reason he decided not to. Which he can't, to this day, he cannot explain, right? So he goes back the next day, and there's this amazing agriglyph, complicated crop circle in the field where he saw these things.
Hmm.
And there have been some pretty amazing designs in the fields in Wiltshire this last few weeks. And here we have to break.
Oh.
Darn. And then you're not going to get a look in the next half hour because Stephen G. Bassett is going to join us. Sorry, Dave, for a lot.
Sure. Okay. We'll come back. I'm sure we'll catch up.
I'm sure we shall. You can email us, sdi@virtuallystrange.net, just the way Victor Vigiani did mere moments ago. He's listening tonight in White Rock, B.C. Evening, Victor and Lori and your friends there. Say hi to my sister. She's out there, and Tim Henry's out there, too.
Mm-hmm.
Staying with friends, being to Banff, Canmore, Lake Louise. Oh,
isn't that nice?
Oh, sushi at the Banff Springs Hotel.
Best sushi anywhere.
And the best view on the planet is at Lake Louise. It's just gorgeous there. He's not back till August 1st if he decides to remain on the planet. And never could stay out there for just 1 week. Going to Whistler tomorrow for 3 days. Watch out for the elk and the moose and the outer islands. And no sightings yet, Victor Vigiani says, but the digital camera is pointed and armed. And let Steve Bassett know that the last press release for the upcoming UFO conference here in Toronto had 64,100 reads and 2,800 media pickups.
Excellent.
Excellent. And speaking of Steve Bassett, because he's waiting patiently on the phone line there, joining us from his home just outside Washington, D.C. is Washington, D.C. UFO lobbyist, the only official lobbyist, a man much traveled on behalf of things ufological around North America, bumped into some interesting people over the years. Joining us on the phone is Stephen G. Bassett. Good evening, Stephen.
Good evening, Earl. Who's with you, Victor?
No. Victor is on vacation. I just read his email. Dave Furlot is sitting here.
Hi, Dave. How are you doing?
Good to hear you there, Stephen.
You're off by 1,200 miles, my friend. I'm actually in Denver, Colorado, at the MUFON Annual Symposium.
Oh, is that where you are?
Oh.
Mm-hmm. I knew that was on. I didn't realize that's where you were. I thought we were calling you on the landline, but I guess this is your cell phone.
Well, it was a cell, but I switched over to the hotel phone.
Ah, smart.
Here for the, I forget which one it is, but
the 100
it's going very nicely. 130,000.
Yes, yes. Among the speakers there this year?
Stan Friedman, Richard Dolan, Lynn Katai.
Hey, good lineup.
It's actually, obviously, up on MUFON.com, and it's a fine lineup. David Tarita speaking, Paula Harris, and there's been a decent amount of extra-political discussions, particularly at the banquet on Friday night.
Mm-hmm.
So that's part of it. I think that's becoming a regular part of MUFON. I want it to become a much bigger part of MUFON, to be honest. But still, it's moved to a even swankier hotel than last year. It's in the Techwood Marriott, mm-hmm. which is, you know, almost 4 stars, maybe 3.5 stars.
Oh, not bad.
So we continue to get, again, high-quality venues for these conferences now, which is reflects, you know, the importance of it and the acceptance by the public.
What about the attendance there? How is that this year?
It seems fine. I don't have a specific number.
No.
I think it's similar last year. The banquet was well attended, a lot there. So it's about typical for a MUFON.
Who was the keynote? Is there a keynote this year?
The keynote. Oh boy. You know, I feel like I'm slow in the uptake here, because when I come out, you know, for these things, I'm really more here for side meetings.
Yeah, right? Understood. Yes, yes.
And frequently I don't go to the presentation and don't know, and that's kind of, you know, not cool, but it's, you know, I've been to a lot of presentations, you understand.
Yes, mm-hmm. yeah. Well, if you're anything like me, I tend to fall asleep at them now.
Well, we don't want to talk about that.
No, and I don't want to be insulting or rude, you know, to any of the speakers in whose presence I've done that. But I don't know, it's like something happens inside my brain, and it's like, click, and whoever I'm with is nudging me, saying, you're snoring.
You've been at this a long time. And here's more names. Scott Ramsey spoke about the Aztec crash. Phyllis Buttinger spoke about physical evidence on abductions. Tracy Austin Peters has been moderating. Roger Lear's here. Esin Sekarahar of Turkey is here, Richard mm-hmm. Dolan mentioned. They're showing the Phoenix Lights documentary again, which has been upgraded. Again, Lynn Katai's documentary, which won the Best Director Award at the New York Film Festival, Claude Swanson, Leo Sprinko.
Oh.
Right, here.
Mm-hmm.
Lane Douglas will be speaking. It's a rare appearance by her. And I think I mentioned the others. I don't really think they have a keynote. They have the banquet on Friday. So they have a panel.
Right.
They had a panel is what they do instead of a keynote. They did that on Friday night with Richard Dolan, Stan Freeman, and John Schussler, who is looking okay. You know, John's been under the weather, but he seemed better.
Good.
And Delar Storch. I think it's the one that moderate that. So it's kind of a good conference.
Have you sussed out any reaction to Nick Redfern's book down there on Roswell?
Not yet. Mm. Not yet, but there's been reaction on the web, of course.
Oh, of course. Yeah, and especially on the UFO updates list. I mean, that's been just, I would say a good 30% of the traffic has been about body snatchers in the desert, Nick Redfern's book.
Have you had Nick on yet?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, we actually, we managed to grab him before he went on vacation to pre-record. He'd booked, back in January, he and his wife had booked a vacation on the strength of Simon & Schuster saying that they were going to publish his book in March. So they delayed it to August, to July, the beginning of July, and of course the book came out, and 5 days later Nick and his wife went away on their non-refundable vacation in a beach house somewhere in Mexico.
So hopefully not in the path of the hurricane.
They got back in time to avoid that, fortunately.
Good. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad to be here. I'm moving on to Phoenix after that, then on to the West Coast. I'm really getting back into the play here after a sort of recovery period from the Second Air Conference.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a lot coming up I'd like to mention, if I could. I will be speaking in Santa Barbara. By the way, those of you who are on Virtually Strange and that site already, go down to the show and click on my name, and it'll take you over to the lead page where all this is I'm referring to.
Mm-hmm.
And the main address is ParadigmClock.com, which is the main page. I'll be speaking in Santa Barbara on the 12th at the Marjorie Luke Theater there. That's a beautiful theater. Of course, I'll be speaking in Toronto on the 25th of September. I'm going to be going to Italy in early October, speak overseas for the second time after Toronto, first time to Italy.
Overseas.
Overseas. Toronto. What does that mean?
Italy, yes, is overseas.
Toronto is not.
Second international conference, huh?
Well, you're over lake.
Oh.
You're over lake,
yes,
they're over
we
sea.
Are.
It,
well,
it's close.
Big enough lake to be called a sea.
And getting the word out, I'm going to be doing a lot more of that, booking into cities all around the country on the exopolitical issue from my perspective, all right? And then something else is I'm announcing tonight for the first time on your show, once again, a first. There's three reasons why I'm doing this, The first one is to get, it's a way of getting a message out, right?
Mm-hmm.
And secondly, it's a way of raising funds for the work of PRG, which has got to have funds to do what it does. And thirdly, it's an attempt to provide, and I don't think anything has really been done like this before in this field. It's becoming real common elsewhere, to give people a way to link together on this subject so that there's sort of a little kind of a nudge, wink, wink between them. Like, yeah, I know about that stuff. I'm into that too. And so what I've done is this. Starting tonight, exactly at this instant, this moment, factoring in for, you know, lag time and whatever else and time zones, the official motto for all of the work of PRG will be shift happens. All right? Shift happens. Now, this phrase actually is out there. It's been out there for a good while. And there's actually a website, shifthappens.com. There's a number of pages with this. Virtually exclusively been used by consultants and what you call positive seminar presentations and self-help, referring to change in business, how to change your life, how to, you know, move to another level or whatever. It is never, to my knowledge, was never used in the context of what we call, and like to call the paradigm shift, the paradigm change regarding the extraterrestrial presence. And we're connecting it to that now, and I'll tell you more about that after the break.
Good. Nice pickup, Steve. Want you to know that the program, I just did the 100th edition of it. And about 45 minutes ago, we completed the 100th edition. The program's name is Mind Shift. So, yeah. Indeed, shift does happen.
I'll be sending you banners.
Okay, then. And we'll probably put them up for you, too, because we're nice people. Dave Farlot is in studio with me. We shall return with Stephen G. Bassett of the Paradigm Research Group and the big conference in that's held in Washington, D.C. every year now, and has just announced on this program our exclusive, our scoop, the Paradigm Research Group's slogan or motto is Shift Happens.
Yes, indeed, and that includes, and that's official model for everything. I mean, the X Conference, X Pack, the Works, Citizen Hearing, and Shift Happens is very clear. It's very clear connection. It refers specifically in this context to the paradigm shift, which instantly is launched. Sometimes I call it a paradigmatic tsunami that will be instantly created when the disclosure event takes place. And the disclosure event, as we've said thousands of times, is the day that the world's governments, probably starting with the U.S. government, announces or acknowledges the extraterrestrial presence. Now, we got the website shifthappens.us, which I was very happy about.
Oh, nice.
Because and that's where this will be based. Because even though this is a worldwide thing, we know that, it's very likely it's going to start with the U.S. based upon pressure coming in from other countries. Now, let me give you the quick story on this, because it's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
All of this emerges from the work of a San Diego-based artist named Michael Sterling. And he has a commercial main website, has a cool address, herofx.com, like HEROFX.com. And that's where he's doing a lot of work. And some time ago, he came up with the idea of Shift Happens. But he agreed to come together with me to do more than just have it as an option amongst the many things that he is doing, but also to make it a purpose-driven marketing concept. And I told you the reasons, and one of those reasons is to hook people together, and there's a perfect analogy to this. We've all driven around, and countless times we've been behind a car that has a little fish symbol on the back of the car. And I think everybody knows what I'm talking about. That symbol, of course, refers to Christianity, and it comes from the ancient Roman times when the Christians were hiding in the catacombs, and they had a little symbol that would sort of let people know that they were going in the right direction. They're trying to find them or let people know about a meeting or whatever. And that's become a way for people to link. It's a little thing that says, look, I'm a Christian. Are you? Okay. Shift Happens is going to become, we hope, the means by people to connect on this issue. So if someone is driving by in a car that has Shift Happens bumper stick on it, then that's a little message to them. Yeah, I know what's going on. I know that there's an ET presence, and I know that we're about to probably learn about it. So now we've got the public involved. So Michael has agreed to create a range of products over the coming weeks, and when you go to this website, shifthappens.us, which you can link directly from my top page at paradigmclock.com, which can jump over from, as you know, your virtuallystrange.net. But right in the center, you'll see the logo, shifthappens.us. You go over there, over the coming weeks and months, you're going to see a whole range of products that are going to turn up there, all built around this concept of shift happens. And Michael has generously agreed that any of those products that are sold, 50% of the net proceeds, will go directly to the work of PRG and X-Conference and so forth, which is all about one thing, ending the truth embargo. So we're hoping that the public will embrace this idea, have some fun with this. I just think it's cool. I love it. So that's the announcement tonight, and we certainly welcome feedback on it. Anybody have any ideas for a product that they'd like to see this phrase on, we'll certainly consider it and add it to the mix.
So shifthappens.us is online right now?
It's up now, online right now.
Oh, good, good.
And it's also linked from my site, and we'll be sending out banners all over to websites all over the country saying, look, if you put this banner up, you're helping PRG by creating a product flow. See, one of the problems that I've always had since I started this 10 years ago is that because this is an advocacy that I'm involved in, advocacy, political activism, and so forth and so forth, what you do to raise funds, you got to be very careful about. In other words, you can have a business tie-in, but you have to be very careful how you do it, because otherwise you subvert the fundamental work, which is activism. Right? It's not business first, it's activism first. But you know that if you don't find ways to raise funds, activism just dies. It goes out. Without money, activism dies out. And if the major activist movements of the 20th century did not have funds, let me tell you, women wouldn't be able to vote. There'd be separate bathrooms in the South, and England would Britain would probably still be, you know, colonizing India. So without funding, activism doesn't move forward. So you've got to raise that money, but you have to do it in a way that does not undermine the political advocacy aspect. So we think this will work. We hope this will work, and to have some fun with it. So Michael Sterling, great artist, been involved and supportive of this work and these issues for many, many years. I hope that he gets a lot of recognition for this, and that this phrase becomes a symbol for public desire. Now, and we're going to expand, you know, but the bracelet thing going on, you got the yellow, the green. Don't be surprised if my shift happened bracelet doesn't turn real soon.
Is that going to have Strange Days Indeed on it too, Stephen?
You know, I can be talk to me. I am open to all offers. Right?
Well, I'm just looking at the shifthappens.us website, and when you put your cursor over the the logo on the front there, the shift happens, a little window pops up that says shift happens, strange days indeed.
Oh, yeah, that's because of the opening. Yeah, that's because we are now thinking tonight, we've sort of given everybody a little special deal. Because, you know, prices could go up, what can I say? Or they may not. But, everybody should work, if we all work together and help each other, we're all going to get our goals here. We're going to solve this problem.
So shifthappens.us, folks, keep an eye on that in the next couple of weeks. We've run out of time together, Stephen. We got 30 seconds to get out of here and make way for the news departments. Thank you for being with us. Good luck with Shift Happens. I'm sure that something is going to come out of it. And we'll talk to you soon.
I'll be seeing you in Toronto.
Yes, you will.
I'd love to see that September. Whole convocation hall filled up.
Yeah, we'll probably see you live here in studio the night before if you're in town.
That's fine with me.
Good. Look right. Forward to it. We'll talk to you next month. Good night, Stephen.
Good night, Dave.
Good night, Stephen.
Good night, Gracie. And we'll break here for the latest from the newsrooms, and we shall return with Robert Emmenegger. Shift happens, huh?
It most certainly does.
Dear, this whole exopolitics thing, I mean, it's the waters are fairly muddy as it is. And, you know, the Michael Sallas and the Alfred Webers and the exopolitics and the Stephen Greers just tend to get in the way.
Yes, they tend to muddy those waters because bottom line is what we're looking for is the truth about UFOs, regardless of what that truth is.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole exopolitical movement tends to basically have made a statement. And they have made the statement saying, this is what UFOs are, and here's all the people that we have that say this is what they are.
Doesn't matter on about what the opinion of the major researchers and you know the thinking in ufology is about those people who support the exopolitical theories.
Again, the problem is some of these people that are used as the information behind the exopolitics. There are people like Colonel Corso, Bob Lazar. I'm sorry. You know, we've proven time and time again that these gentlemen did not tell us the truth.
Clifford Stone.
Yeah, Clifford Stone. I mean, we can't say it enough times that, sorry, pal, you told your story. We looked up into the facts, and you lose. Okay? Don't bring that person or that person's testimony to me and say, this proves that we have 57 different species of aliens out here. Sorry. No, I'm not buying it.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And it confuses people out there, you know? It makes people crazy is what it does. Especially the researchers who and the, you know, the respected voices in the field who have put in their time and energy for years and years and years, it makes them bananas.
Go nuts, because bottom line is what we want to do is we want to find out exactly what this thing is. I don't care if it's a bloody frisbee that's thrown in the air. If that's what it is, that's what it is. But the bottom line is, I want to know. I really do want to know. I know that there is something out there in regards to UFOs. Mm-hmm. I know this for a fact. This is not a belief. It's proven time and time again by the reports, by the sightings, by all of these things. The thing is, we don't know yet exactly what it is. We have our theories, and we are trying desperately to prove that this is something, but that proof is yet to be there. And exopolitics is not that proof.
No, it isn't, and it's just not going to help a whole bunch at all, as I have pointed out to several people on more than one occasion. Got an interesting email to change the subject.
Sure.
Okay, because you and I are just going to get progressively more and more pissed, aren't we? Is what's going to happen. I got an interesting email this week from a name that I thought I recognized asking me as the moderator of UFO Updates where I got my information from. And I thought, well, that's interesting. I know the name Robert Emmenegger. And because I have a book by this gentleman, UFOs Past, Present, and Future, sitting on the bookshelf at home. I had it for a while. It was $1.50 paperback.
Wow.
Originally. and it was a name that I, of course, I've come across in the last 10 years or so that I've been fairly actively involved in, on peripherally, albeit so, you know, as a communications facilitator. I don't consider myself to be a researcher or a ufologist, but certainly have helped communications along a bit in, over the last few years. And I come across his name on the list a few times. And in fact, if you go to tonight's program listing, you will see some links to some of the stuff that's appeared on the list that includes the name Robert Emmenegger. So I responded and told Robert where it was that a lot of the stuff came from on the list, and included my telephone number, and he was kind enough to call me back, and we had this really good conversation, an interesting discussion. Where and the upshot of it is that he's now on the phone waiting for me to finish doing the introduction, down there in Louisiana. He's an author of UFOs, Past, Present, and Future. He's a film producer, has produced and written many feature films and documentaries, and a couple of those documentaries, or at least one of them, we will touch on perhaps a little more than lightly as say good evening to Robert Emmenegger, and welcome to Strange Days indeed, sir.
Well, thank you very much.
Good evening, Robert.
I assume one of these voices is Earl.
Yeah, that's me, and the other voice is Dave Furlott, who was holding forth about exopolitics mere moments ago. And I don't know if you're aware of the exopolitical movement that has sort of reared its strange head in the last few years.
Well, I was curious about the word, the use of that word, and I'll have to have a definition from you, if you will.
Off the planet politics.
Yes, exactly.
Extraterrestrial politics. Based on a lot of assumptions by a lot of people who aren't exactly, as Dave said, coming forward with the truth. Mm-hmm. Mostly subscribed to by people who are relatively new to the field. Mm-hmm. And as we know, there has been a lot of, to put it bluntly, BS that's been out there about a lot of ufological history.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
The exopolitical crowd, for the most part, are this part of the school that subscribes to the BS side of things.
Actually, a good indicator of the exopolitical movement would be the movie Men in Black, where they show the one character, and I believe it's in the New York's World Fair, is actually a UFO in disguise type thing.
Strangely enough, I did not see that film, just because I thought it was semi-cartoon.
Well, yes, it is. It's semi-cartoon.
It is.
It's fun.
It is.
It's
exactly.
A very
it's
silly
a great movie.
Yeah. It's very silly, which is what exopolitics is.
Yes, the exopolitical crowd would kind of put it as a documentary.
Dave Furlott wins more votes.
Somebody's going to hang me sooner or later.
Robert Emmenegger, you've had an interesting and storied career in Hollywood. Have known many interesting people, many, many names that we would recognize.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and because we had a little difficulty in getting in touch with you, probably my fault, because I transposed the telephone number. Is that what I did? Yeah, Drew is nodding his head through the glass.
Okay,
so my apologies, Robert, but we've just introduced you and we need to take a break.
Oh, all right.
That's commercial radio for you.
Oh, good.
Okay, so we will do that and we will come back and...
There's a lot of stuff to chat about,
as Dave says. We shall return with Robert Emmenegger, UFOs Past, Present, and Future. You can still buy it. It's available at Amazon.com. They have many copies of it there.
You said it's eighth printing. That's where it left off, anyway. I remember.
Eighth printing.
Wow.
We shall return.
We were all quite pleased with ourselves that we'd been able to photograph all three stages of power fog of the missile. And there, coming out of the fog, was the missile that we'd photographed from 186 miles away. And one-third of that rocket filled the frame from that distance. Suddenly, from the left-hand side of the screen, something else flew into the frame. Fired a beam of light, which struck the dummy warhead. Flew up on top of the warhead, hit it again with another beam of light, flew off toward the right-hand side of the screen. It's doing a circle, if you can imagine, circling our warhead. Fired another beam of light at it, which struck the warhead, continued its arc, came underneath it, and fired a fourth beam of light, then came back 360 degrees and flew back out of the frame in the same direction it had come.
And what speed is this warhead traveling that this thing is flying around and
it's
around?
It's going 8 or 9,000 miles an hour by this point.
8 or 9,000 miles an hour.
And accelerating.
The voice of former Air Force lieutenant at a U.S. Air Force film crew missile test launch at Vandenberg Air Force Base, Bob Jacobs. And Robert Emmenegger, I think that you were part of the another team that was shooting those tests, were you not?
No, not really. The Air Force brought to us a lot of footage in which we were looking at to review for our program.
There you go.
And there was a piece that was brought in with top secret. It said Hector Quintanilla's name on it. It was a Vandenberg shot, and the one that we had and reviewed was it looked like two objects that shot that followed all three cameras, so that each camera was picking up the exact same things. And we asked Bob, Bob Baker, who analyzed all the things in 1952 for when the CIA was investigating it. I happened to know him, and we brought him in to say, what are the chances of these being reflections or whatnot? And he said it was about 1,000,000 to 1 that they were objects. We didn't include them in our film, but because it was just a little too hard to present on television, decided to not use it. But it sure was a very interesting thing, and it was Air Force took it pretty seriously, I'd say, especially when it classified it as top secret.
And more than the above average interest by these white objects or metallic discs in what was going on the missile test range off Vandenberg Air Force Base in California.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But these objects have had interest in Air Force bases around the world, and including one that you were particularly interested in, Holloman, as well, huh?
Yes, well, that's absolutely true. Well, as you know, at the time I was actually creative director of Gray Advertising on the West Coast here, and my partner said, because we were starting to do a few films together, said, let's go out to Norton Air Force Base, and we're going to look into projects that are R&D projects that might make good television specials. And believe me, I was not a UFO believer at all. My wife, you know, used to read the tabloids, and I'd say, don't read that kind of junk. And then I've already told you that we were, after we discussed several projects, we went into the clean room out there, which is used by, it's clean, it's not bugged, and because that particular studio is used by the CIA for training films. But then we were told by security that, you know, what would we think if they told us that there had been a landing of an alien craft at Holloman Air Force and that it had been filmed. And I had to really stop and think what they just told us. And they said, you know, if you're interested, we'll set up a liaison with the Pentagon. And we began our project, but they wanted us to bury that particular UFOs under all the other stuff because it sent up a red flag with the Pentagon, you know, they just, so that's how it proceeded. So I went from thinking it was just, you know, something, the tooth fairy or something, to a reality by the end we were, the time we were through with the project.
Oh, I guess that was quite a mind shift for you.
Well, it really is, it was, absolutely.
So, somebody in the Air Force said, "What would you think if we were to give you?"
I can give you his name. His name is Paul Charlie. He was head of security out in Norton, and he told me that the colonel in charge had sort of, after I quizzed him, who was an OSI officer, had sort of encouraged him to do this. I never quite got to the bottom of it. It was a puzzle to me why they were so open at this time about this, although my partner had done some dealings with the DOD, so it just unfolded that way.
Did they offer anything else other than just that little snippet?
Anything else?
Well, what they offered us was a carte blanche to ask any questions to meet with, well, we ended up spending time with past heads of Project Blue Book who came forward one after the other, including, you know, I met with Colonel Weinbrenner, who was commander of foreign technology, which is, you know, the spy center for the Air Force, and we met him down in his bunker. And I asked him outright, the first question was, what about the landing of an alien craft at Holloman Air Force Base? And then we had sort of this Kafka-esque exchange where he started drawing pictures of MiGs on the blackboard and saying how the Soviets know all about us and we know very little about them. Then he went on to say, and I thought, well, maybe he didn't hear my question. But then he said, you know, the problem right now is weather alteration, that the Soviets are quite ahead of us in that. He said, but we're working on counter strategies with the best scientists that we have. And I thought, man, he never heard the question. But then he said, for instance, scientists like this, and he took a book off his shelf and put it in my lap, and it was to my good friend, Colonel Weinbrenner, signed Dr. Alan Hynek. Oh. And the book was on UFOs.
I got to stop you there because we're running into news headline time here.
Okay.
It's a fascinating story, Robert Emmenegger. And let's pick it up the other side of the news headlines.
Okay.
Robert Emmenegger is our guest this hour. Dave Furlot is in studio with me. And just fascinating stories that are coming from Robert Emmenegger's direction. Wendy Connors, if you're out there, this is a gentleman who needs to be recorded for the oral history of ufology. I don't know if you're aware of Wendy Connors, Robert, but Wendy is an audio archivist in the field, has been doing amazing work gathering recordings, historic recordings, from the 40s on, and has put out several CDs with MP3s, hours and hours of audio history of ufology and UFOs on each disc, and is also involved with the Project Sign historical audio archive. And I think
you mean the original Project Sign?
Yes. And I think that you're definitely somebody that the Project Sign historical team should talk to, because, you know, we're not going to have time to touch on that nearly as much as really needs to be touched on tonight. Colonel Weinberger was
Weinbrenner,
I should say, Weinberger.
That's right. He was
a fan of Alan Hynek's.
Well, they work together because the foreign technology is where all of the things were refined and went through as far as UFOs, because foreign technology not only included Russia, but it also included, you know, things out there that weren't ours. So,
yeah.
And that's where the refinement came in. And in fact, Colonel Weinbrenner, while we were talking, first of all, well, we don't have time to go into it, but first after we met with Colonel Bill Coleman, he said, you ought to talk to Colonel Weinbrenner. After we had a conversation with him, he told me about one of his officers who he thought, well, I don't want to particularly give you the picture that he gave me of him, this person who finally, the next day, Quintanilla called and said, gee, George asked if I would come and, you know, call you. So little by little, all the past heads of Project Blue Book started coming into our program. So it was very interesting. Now, you know that show, I don't know if you ever saw it, UFOs, Past, Present, Future. That was the original one. And the foreign press looked at it, and it was nominated for a Golden Globe Award, and that's pretty unusual for a subject like UFOs,
yes.
I thought.
Yeah, and the media is still producing the programs, but boy, they sure are cranking out some.
They're just turning it out.
Yeah,
rehashing.
Yep. Something that I wanted to touch on, and you and I haven't talked about in the past. Back in 19 98. I wrote to the UFO updates list, and this was in connection with something that both Mike Crystal and Bruce Maccabee had been writing and addressing.
Mm-hmm.
And Holloman Air Force Base came up, which I responded to the discussion that these two guys were having on list.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, speaking of which, Holloman came up again in my life this past weekend. During a remember, this is 98. During a phone conversation with James H. McCampbell, author of Ufology, New Insights from Science and Common Sense, this past Saturday, Jim dropped a new one on me with reference to the Holloman landing. He almost casually mentioned that three military bird colonels, his words, left with the visitors. On their return, one colonel went insane, one died, and one and Jim didn't know what happened to the other one. Now I said,
sounds like a wonderful science fiction.
It does, doesn't it?
Story.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I at the time scoured the archives and couldn't find any reference to the bird colonels.
No, in fact, I don't know where these stories come from. I was once corrected. In a magazine, a UFO magazine, by Bill Moore, saying the date was wrong. It had to be 1964. Well, look, I didn't make it up. I saw the documents, and the date that was given is May of 71, you know, so anybody can say whatever they want. I only went by the information that I was given, you know. I don't know. Everybody makes up stories, it seems.
The Holloman Air Force Base footage, did you ever get to see that footage?
I only saw, I have to say on the phone here, that I did not. I had it laid out for me by those who did see it, and we had a police sketch person who would describe what the aliens look like. And why I didn't see it, I can only tell you that the film, I foolishly thought we would just add it at the end of our special, but Colonel Coleman had it confiscated and was driven back by one of the people out at Norton in his little Honda, from what I understand, and delivered to the Pentagon, where it sits, and there is a copy of it somewhere in the Navy sink. Well, it's kind of complicated. I know that it's been... I don't know. I do know that I heard that Carter, it's the first time I've heard this in a long time, that Carter, when he was in one of the briefings, it mentioned that he saw 15 minutes of a Holloman landing, which is the first time I'd heard someone else other than what we are talking about mention it.
Now, when you say Carter...
President Carter.
Oh, you are referring to Jimmy Carter.
Yeah,
okay.
Jimmy Carter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He certainly was one that was absolutely fascinated and wanted to get...
Oh, yeah, well, he'd had his own sighting.
Yeah,
And
so did Reagan.
Reagan, he and Nancy were flying somewhere and had themselves a sighting. And you and I, when we were talking earlier in the week, discussed the Reagan statement about, I often think, you know...
Yes, that was part of the program I put in. Had Leon Festinger, who's a fairly well-known social psychologist. We paid a handful of social psychologists in universities to comment on the scenario of the landing at Holloman Air Force Base, which we passed out, just as at least as I was told it happened, and asked how would the public react if this was made, a special announcement from the White House or wherever that this event had happened. It was kind of interesting. One of them said what we needed was an invasion from outer space to unite us as one species and therefore drive the invader away, therefore happily to live in peace thereafter, which is kind of not the way I think it would really turn out. But it was now the Reagan administration is the one where Miller and Scott, and I know you've got some music playing there, so it must be time, that the Reagan, two of Reagan appointees, approached me in the mid-80s to do another program on UFOs. and we spent a lot of time discussing it. There was apparently more material out at Norton. He was the commander out at Norton, Bob Scott. I'd like to know where he is, by the way, Bob Scott.
Oh, my. You know, the longer you and I spend time talking on the phone, whether it's on the radio or privately, the more I know that, you know, somebody has to sit down with you for several hours and grab all of this stuff. This is important UFO history. We're talking with Robert Emmenegger, film producer, writer, director, author, documentary and book UFOs, past, present, and future. Made back in the 70s, and we haven't yet discussed Walt Disney and UFO.
Well, we met with Walt Disney.
Yeah, let's touch on that when we come back.
I occasionally think how quickly our differences worldwide would vanish if we were facing an alien threat from outside this world. And yet, I ask you, is not an alien force already among us? What could be more alien to the universal aspirations of our peoples than war and the threat of war?
SDI at virtuallystrange.net is the email address. Dave Furlot in studio with me on the phone. Our guest is Robert Emmenegger, author and producer of UFOs, Past, Present, and Future. UFOs, the Real Story. One of the few books that can actually claim to have that appellation, UFOs, the Real Story. A little time, Robert, Disney's UFOs and Disclosure, a lot of people don't know about Ward Kimball, even.
Oh, I remember that name.
But Ward Kimball was one of the original Disney animators, referred to by Disney, Walt Disney, as one of the trusted nine old men, a Supreme Court of Animation, who died in California on July the 8th, 2002. But he was famous for his creation of the character of Jiminy Cricket, the Cheshire Cat, the March Hare, the Mad Hatter, and for redesigning Mickey Mouse in 1938. He was involved in Pinocchio, Fantasia, Peter Pan, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Just an amazing, amazing man. But what wasn't known to many Disney watchers was that Ward Kimball was also a student of UFOs and outer space.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a real large collection of UFO books and magazines.
Mm-hmm.
You were connected somehow with Ward Kimball, weren't you?
Well, the connection was as we did a lot of our research, somehow Disney's name came up because there was somebody working there, and it probably was Kimball. So we met with him, and I had heard, and I since have heard, that Disney was approached by the Air Force to do a film on UFOs, and they had promised them some sort of footage, and it finally didn't work out. It just was incompleted, and I know that Grant Cameron, if you know who he is.
Yes, of course. Grant's been on this program many times.
He was one of the first, or he had discovered that Disney was one of the first that was approached to put out a UFO special of some sort. I don't know who was next, but I know that, according to Grant, you know, we were about the third one in line and finally succeeded in at least getting the sanction of the military. And that's all I can tell you, because a lot of these names you mentioned, I really have not read very many UFO books. Mm-hmm. I only know what I was exposed to tell you the truth.
Yeah. So looking back at your UFO experiences or UFO related experiences, how do you feel about all of that now?
Well, it is a huge eye opener. And part of the thing that I am grateful for is that it opened up avenues of meeting other people in related fields, like Hal Puthoff, who's still a friend. And we talk about, a lot of scientific things and discussing zero-point energy. And he's very fascinated with the UFO phenomenon. And we discussed it. Now, you asked me how I really feel about it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I came from a point of view of thinking it was just nonsense to when we did that UFO special, I told the military that, I know you had 12,000 cases and you solved most of them, but in our show, I just want to talk about the ones that were unexplained. So that's kind of what led me to feel that, and adding also, by the way, Leon Festinger's stuff, if I was to take that show and in a court of law and say, is this phenomena a real phenomena or what, by what evidence we're presenting, I felt that, you know, it made quite a case for, the UFO thing. In fact, no one ever denied or talked about cover-ups when we were doing this project. They only said that so far it has not been a threat to national security, mm-hmm. and therefore, the military sort of seems not to be concerned. Of course they're concerned, but so far it hasn't been a threat.
Oh, well.
So I believe that, in fact, in our program, probably not the one you saw, we did a later update in about 1980 with Jacques Vallée, and it called UFOs, It Has Begun. It incorporated the original, and then Jacques said, why don't we talk about animal mutilations and a few other things?
Mm-hmm.
And it certainly wasn't as pure as the first one, but I don't know. In it, I had Quintanilla, Al Chop, Hynek, and Colonel Friend sitting on the stage talking about how they really felt about the UFOs. And every one of them agreed that there could be no other explanation other than some intelligence out there, and that we just we're not scientifically advanced enough to really understand it.
And again, Quintanilla was the one-time head of Project Blue Book.
Yes, he was.
The official United States Air Force official reporting body for investigation, investigative body. Yeah, Project Blue Book.
And also Colonel Bob Friend was another one who was. And then Coleman, who wasn't here, he was out in the East Coast, was Pentagon spokesman who had a personal experience of flying a B-25 and pursuing one, which he reported it to his heads, but they preferred that he did not put that down in his record because he was the one who interfaced with the press talking about UFOs. So, but I believe now it's just a phenomenon. It's going to be not long from now that we're going to have to have this sort of encounter. I think it's already happened, but
yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the general feeling is that it has happened, and if it hasn't happened publicly yet, it will in the next couple of 3 years anyway.
So.
Yeah, Robert, I appreciate you coming on the program tonight. Lord, I wish we had more time together.
Oh, we need it.
You know, there's just so much to talk about, and you have so much knowledge that isn't out there in a very public way, and you have so many dots to really connect that perhaps we can have you back soon. Would that be possible? And we
of
could
course,
spend.
Of course.
We could
you
spend.
Know, I enjoy it because I don't really have that much of a chance to talk about this.
Yeah.
I do other things. So it was not an assignment, but it was a project that opened my eyes to a lot of things.
Thank you, sir. We will. You and I will talk, and we will set up another appointment if we may.
Sure.
Good night, Robin Emmenegger. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Good night.
Good night, Robert.
Good night, Dave Frelott. Thank you. Thank you, guys out there in Master and in Montreal also. And I got to bail. I'm way over time. Wow. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Gene Mascardelli. Send any questions or comments to sdi@virtuallystrange.net. Strange Days Indeed is the copyright of Random Fit Productions. Join us again next Saturday for more Strange Days Indeed from the Virtually Strange Network. Good night.